Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest episode, the latest adventure, the latest chapter from Planet Porky in the podcast Life on Planet Porky. Welcome, and welcome, of course, to the rock chick extraordinaire, Miss Leslie Ann Jones. Miss Jones, how are you this fine day?
Well, considering the weather, which is awful and quite depressing, I think, firing on all four here, Michael. Thank you very much.
Yes, okay, that's good. I like a bit of cooler weather, actually, so I'm quite pleased about it. I couldn't walk anywhere this week. It's too
much
hot.
Easier to sleep as well, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Much easier to sleep, indeed it is. Now, of course, we're all immersed in the football at the moment. It was Father's Day yesterday, Leslie Ann. I saw you put out a picture of you and your late, much-beloved father. And, of course, he was one of Britain's most famous football reporters of all time. So he would have been immersed in this competition now. And would he have been following Wales?
Well, absolutely. He would have followed all the games, of course. He'd sat there glued to it, you know. But I think, look, Wales held their own yesterday, didn't they? Mm-hmm. They were lacklustre, but they did what they had to do. They've gone through. I think England, we talked about this, they were a bunch of six-year-olds running around like headless chickens on the pitch there.
Well, shocking game.
Very disappointing, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I do. I think it was, shocking, really, in the sense that I said England should have won by three goals because the quality of the squad itself is so much better than Scotland's. But you can't take anything away from Scotland. They did brilliantly well. They stood there. They might get through now. Wales are through now. So a lot of home country's excitement really to come.
Yeah, I think the fact that the home teams, we've got a choice, haven't we? Yeah. We're rooting for them all. They all mean just as much to us because they are our teams.
Yeah.
They are our home guys. So, it's pretty exciting. I don't see any of our teams winning it, however.
No, I don't either.
Italy are going to take it, in my view.
Well, Italy are looking very, very good at the moment. I totally agree with that aspect of it. I still think you can never write off the Germans, and France have also got a very strong squad. But there we are. Now, another issue which is consuming me, Ms. Jones, and obviously we're watching the football every day, but we are now talking about Diana at 60, and I think it's about a week's time, I think. I think it was July the 1st that... she was born, I think. And I've had enough. I've had enough of Diana over the years. I was the person who made the announcement to the world that she was dead. That was 23 years ago. There hasn't been a day gone by, basically, without a story about Diana or one of her children ever since. And now all the papers are filling up again with Diana at 60. But as you pointed out to me in a chat we've had, no, it won't be Diana at 60. Diana is never going to be 60.
She was 36, I think, when she died. And you remain that age for the rest of time.
Yes.
The age at which you died. She will never age. It's almost a blessing in a way because her beauty was so extraordinary.
Yeah.
And her mythology was so all-pervading. And that is, it's captured in time as if in amber. Mm. That's never going to change.
Yeah.
But I think the newspapers haven't let it go because it sells papers.
Does it still?
I think so. Obviously, I think so because
a cover of Diana is still good enough on the newsstand to actually, register a sale, you think?
It has to be, otherwise they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
And so I think that is the cynical reason why there is so much coverage.
Yes.
It's very unkind to William and Harry, who've never been allowed to let their mother rest in peace.
No.
They should have been allowed to process their grief and move on. Mm. They can't.
Mm.
And we are going to have this for the rest of time, because sooner or later, Her Majesty is going to pass. Charles will be crowned king.
Yep.
Camilla will effectively be queen.
Mm.
And we're going to have it all over again. This dreadful woman would not be on the throne if not for the fact that Diana and Dodi died in Paris.
Yeah.
We're going to have that forever. So I think, you know, we have to get used to it haven't by now.
I saw Diana's brother on the telly the other morning and he was on to flog a book. He's written some book about something, okay? And to be fair to him, they started off obviously talking to him about, Bashir and Diana and all that, which Diana's brother raised in the first place. But then after about 10 minutes, they said, now about your book. And fairness to him, he said, I'm not going to talk about the book now, if you don't mind. I feel it's a little insensitive to have talked about my sister and, you know, the most famous woman in the world and her tragic death and those who conspired like Bashir. I don't think now is time to talk about my book. I'll come back next week and talk about my book. And I think that was actually a noble thing to do.
Yes, it was a bit low of them to kick off the interview with questions about his sister.
Yeah.
It's understandable because it's in the news.
Yes, exactly.
It's not resolved, is it? Because Martin Bashir is still vilified.
Yeah.
We know some stories behind that story, which, of course, we can't bring to the public at the moment, but I believe they'll come out in the fullness of time.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Now, since we last spoke, your very big friend, Sir Paul McCartney, has turned 79, so he's in his 80th year, a Beatle in his 80th year. Ringo's already over 80. I always wonder, you know, what might have happened, you know, if John Lennon hadn't been murdered and if George hadn't died of cancer. You've told me before that you think they would have eventually got together, a Band-Aid or something like that. But you do wonder, don't you, what would Lennon be doing today at 80? And, oh, I don't know. It's something never, ever is going to go away, is it?
No, it isn't. I think it's so odd to think that Macca has had 40 years more life than John, his great childhood friend.
Yeah.
It's a sobering thought, actually. But you look at McCartney, I mean, he's not 79, is he? He's 29.
No.
He looks as young and as vibrant as he ever did. I think he's a walking miracle. I absolutely do. I worship the guy.
Yeah, I totally agree. And last time we spoke about him, I said he was married to Nancy Pelosi. And I've had a few barbs on Twitter about that because, of course, she's the Speaker of the House in America. It is, of course, Nancy Chevelle, whose family in their own right are very wealthy, aren't they? They're a trucking family, I think, from sort of New England. And that's always a very good thing, isn't it? If a man like Paul McCartney, virtually a billionaire, can marry a woman who's also got a very well-funded family, because then you get over the Heather Mills problem, don't you?
Well, you do. It's all about gold digging, isn't it? And somebody with a lot less money, which would be the vast majority of women who might be candidates to be Paul McCartney's partner.
Indeed.
It's much better for him to have met somebody equal, somebody on his level. I've never met her, but she looks very nice.
Yes, she does.
She's obviously super intelligent, very stylish woman, worships the ground he walks on. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
You know, long may they live and long may their happiness last.
Yes, I totally agree. How many houses has Paul McCartney got? The ones I've counted are the one in New York's super suburb, what's it called?
He's got a house on Long Island.
That's right, Long Island, yeah.
In Southampton, I think, his house is.
Yes, that's right, yeah. It's the Hamptons, it's called, isn't it?
Yeah.
So he's got one there. He's got one in Arizona, because that's where he went when Linda sadly died. They used to ride horses in Arizona together. He must have one, I assume, in New York itself, city, and California. He's got at least three in this country, hasn't he? Because he's got Maida Vale, then he's got one in Sussex. I think he's also got one in Rye, and he's got the farm in Scotland.
Well, he's got his dad's old house in Cheshire, where the piano is, the family piano that he wrote his original songs on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's kept his dad's old house. Mm. He's got a house in Peasmarsh, which was the family home with Linda and the kids.
Yeah.
And also a recording studio with a windmill attached to it.
Yes.
That's not very far from Rye, as you say.
Yeah.
So what I love about Macca, one of the many things, is that he's kept all these properties. He doesn't kind of trade them in.
No.
He keeps the places which are the hubs of his family and his creativity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a lot to be said for that, you know.
I know, but it's an expensive business, because you'd have to have staff at each one, wouldn't you? You know what I mean? Just to make sure that the place is kept, you know, in good shape and all that kind of stuff. I remember we were chasing Mick Jagger once around France when he and Gerry Hall split up. And we went down one of the valleys, the Loire Valley or somewhere like that, you know, to find the Mick Jagger house the chateau on the edge of a river. It's a beautiful property, and amazingly, the gates were open. So we just opened the gates and we drove up there. And there was a French bloke sitting there in a chair outside with a cigarette, a Galois cigarette in his mouth. And only our photographer spoke English. So he went and had a chat with him, came back and said, "No, Jagger isn't here."
French, you mean?
What did I say?
You said English.
Oh, yes, sorry. In French, of course, yeah. The only one who could speak French. And the photographer came back and said, "He's definitely not here." I said, "When was he last here?" He said, 3.5 years ago. They've hardly seen him, you know, in 3.5 years. He's just dropped in very occasionally, but never stayed there. For 3.5 years. I mean, imagine having a house that you don't bother staying at, and you've just got to. It basically, it was a caretaker bloke and his wife, who was the cook. I don't know who she cooked for, because there's nobody there. But
well, they cook for themselves. I always think those guys have the life of Bloody Riley, because say, for example, you're the housekeeper of their place in Mystique.
That's right.
You know, they only go there for Christmas and New Year.
That's right.
So the rest of the time, they're just living in this palace, having a ball.
I think that's another place where he's got a house, St. Bart's, isn't it? Because there's always stories about Paul McCartney and St. Bart's at Christmas. I'm sure he's got one there. But
I don't know that he's got a house there, but he does go there for holidays,
He does go there for holidays as well. So, talking about housework then, did you see Lady Joan Collins with Piers Morgan on Piers Morgan's Life Stories?
Of course I saw it. Dame Joan Collins. We should give her a proper title. Yes, of course I saw it. I thought it was a magnificent show. Wonderful interview. I mean, Piers does get the best out of people, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He does.
Immense flattery. He sort of throws them, covers them in glory.
Yeah.
And of course, then they're all sort of coy and putty in his hands.
Yeah.
And she said quite a lot of revealing stuff in that interview.
Yeah, she did. But the one thing that stuck out for me, and there was a newspaper headline on it a couple of days ago, is she's never actually put her hand on a Hoover. She's never switched a Hoover on. She doesn't know how to use a Hoover. That's incredible for a woman in her 80s.
Well, of course, I have a real argument with this, because Hoover is a brand.
Well, what she means, you know what, I'm
what she
about.
Means is a vacuum cleaner.
That's right.
You know, it's that's one of the things that winds me up more than anything.
Yeah.
But yes, of course, I get the point. She hasn't ever vacuumed.
Yeah.
Why would she? She was a star at the age of 20.
Yes.
So she will have had staff all her life.
Yeah.
So all she's really doing, as she said in the interview, is, you know, she and Percy, her husband, will have a bite to eat in front of the telly, and she'll wash up the dishes.
Yes.
I mean, even the Queen does that.
Yes, that's right. I must admit, I haven't touched a Hoover for about 20 years or ironed a shirt, you know, because I've got a lady I call my housekeeper who comes in twice a week and does all that sort of thing. But then again, you know, if something spills or you know, I don't know, I've put together a new piece of furniture or something, you have to get the Hoover out and Hoover around, you know, just to make sure you get all this sawdust off the floor and all that. But anyway.
I'm going to fine you every time you say the word Hoover.
Yes, I know. I imagine you will. I tell you what, talking about Hoovers. No, let's talk about mechanical things, because yesterday, right, I was walking up to town, and an e-scooter person came whizzing past me, and I'm not joking, I could feel the wind rush at my face, you know what I mean? He went past that fast and that close to me, and he was weaving in and out of people, and I thought, one of these days, they've got to ban these things. And this morning, open a newspaper to this. E-scooter horror. 20-year-old killed and teen passenger injured in UK second fatality. A young e-scooter rider has died after he collided with a car in the second fatality involving the devices in the UK. I mean, talk about predictability.
I actually thought they were banned on pavements.
I thought they were. I thought they were banned per se, and you couldn't actually own one. You could only rent them from a, you know, a properly controlled council sort of block. You know what I mean? Like the Boris bikes.
So maybe it was rented, but that doesn't make a difference. It's still dangerous if the guy rides at you.
Yes.
So we need to review the rules about these things, because
I agree.
Yeah, this can't carry on, can it? For sure.
No, I honestly, there's going to be a total catastrophe, because it'll involve a little child who can't get out of the way quickly enough or something like that, you know?
Well, if one person has died because of this, then already we have the catastrophe on our hands.
Yes. Yes, we do. Yeah, no, I totally. Well, it's two now, isn't it? Anyway, there we are. I saw you tell me, I mentioned a lady called Maya Jama to you.
Maya Jama, yes.
Maya Jama, I was so impressed. I saw Peter Crouch, getting back to football for a minute, has got a football show on at the moment. I think it's on the BBC, and it's an offbeat one, you know what I mean? Looking at the fixtures and the games and the outcomes and interviewing people like Jack Grealish in a bowling alley and all this kind of stuff. But his co-presenter is this beautiful lady called Maya Jama, and I looked her up, and she's only 25, and she's a millionaire, and she got to London at 15 looking for, you know, to make her name in the world of entertainment and all that. And she seems to have done very well. And then I learned that you've got a pair of her trainers. Now, what's all about?
When Maya first hit London, you're quite right, as a young teenager, my daughter had graduated from Exeter University. This is my eldest.
Right.
And she worked for a radio station in London called Rinse FM.
Right.
Which is a very popular, sort of edgy little station.
I remember it. Yeah.
And Mia, who is my daughter, Mia trained Maya to become a radio presenter. She actually taught her the job, yes.
Really? Yeah.
And Maya and Mia became so close. And then Maya started dating Stormzy,
mm-hmm.
who's obviously a major, major artist.
Yes.
And Mia did more and more work for them as a couple. She did quite a lot of stuff for them. And
right.
Maya was always being given free stuff because, you know, when you're a celebrity.
Yes.
And by this time, she's already climbing the ranks.
Right.
And designers and fashion outlets send these people stuff all the time.
Yes.
So if you get sent 20 pairs of trainers in a week,
mm.
you're going to kind of share them out among your friends.
Yeah.
So she gave a couple of pairs to Mia. They weren't her size.
Right.
So she gave them to me.
Yeah.
So I'm now wearing trainers previously owned by Maya Jama.
Well, that's fantastic, isn't it? And did you ever meet the girl yourself?
No, I didn't.
Because she seems to be an awfully nice person, if you know what I mean. But so dramatically glamorous. I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought, wow, you will go everywhere in life. Talking about...
Oh, sure, she will. And do you know what else? Stormzy cheated on her.
Wow.
And if you cheat on somebody like Maya Jama, there's no hope, is there, really?
You're not
going to keep it in your trousers throughout your life.
Do you know what I can't understand? I cannot understand when a bloke has got a woman as beautiful as Maya Jama at her age, in her mid-20s, the height of her success, why on earth would you want to go looking anywhere else anyway? I know it's the eternal question that some men just can't help themselves, like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton literally had some sort of illness about his attraction to women. He simply couldn't keep his hands off them. He couldn't leave them alone. And he was the president of the United States of America. And the only thing that Hillary, his wife, used to get upset about and call him, you know, you stupid bastard, was because he was threatening his presidency. It wasn't about him going off and getting his leg over with all sorts of women all over the place. She just didn't want to be pitched out of the White House if he got impeached.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. But look at Mick Jagger, for example. I mean,
yeah.
Mick Jagger, first of all, married to Bianca Jagger, which a lot of people would say, okay. So he cheats on Bianca all over the place. But when he was with Jerry Hall, he was cheating on her left, right and centre with dozens of women. Dozens of women.
Yeah,
so
that has to be,
it's got to be some kind of sex addiction, hasn't it?
Something like that, I suppose. I don't know. I was going to say, you know, but Mick Jagger was Mick Jagger, the most famous singer in the world. But then again, I suppose Stormzy was at kind of that level, wasn't he?
Well, in his own generation, he is, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think maybe it's a power thing. Sex and power are very closely intertwined, aren't they? And maybe because power is an aphrodisiac, women throw themselves at you, there might be a school of thought that says, well, why not? You know, they're falling at my feet, why shouldn't I?
Mm.
And it's quite a reptilian aspect to existence, I think.
Yeah.
It drags men down to their basest level, in my opinion.
You know what I think it is? I also think, from a male point of view, it's also curiosity, right? You know, for example, you want to know, I wonder if that woman's as good at sex as the woman I'm currently with or better, or you know what I mean? There is, I'm sure there's got to be an element of that. I'm always, you know, when I was a younger man, perhaps, I was always very curious about that sort of thing. And almost every woman that I sort of met or sort of, you know, in the same workplace or socially or in a pub or anything, I don't know if women think like this, but wouldn't you always look at them and think, I wonder whether it would be any good with them? Do you ever think that, Miss Jones?
Well, I think women do think about these things differently. I know that there are women who are game, who will, you know, put themselves around and will try a bit of everything.
Yes.
Why not? That's up to them. But I think the vast majority of women would like a strong relationship with one man only and to be faithful to each other.
Yes.
And I think a lot of men don't feel the same. Variety is the spice of life. Yeah. And they probably think, why do I want to eat steak and kidney pie every night when I can have fish and chips on Friday and a curry at the weekend?
Yeah,
no. So, you know, maybe it's to do with that.
Yeah.
And they don't feel that they're threatening the relationship by having sex elsewhere.
Yeah,
I guess most women would beg to differ.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. One thing that would have kept me on the straight and narrow if I'd have been married was if we had children, because by the time I was in my mid-30s, most of my mates were married or had been married, and I saw the terrible devastation that broken marriages and divorce had upon the children and the relationship with the children and, you know, how to bring the children up. One of the most famous cases was she was a male columnist and then great TV presenter of a quiz. You know what I'm talking about.
Anne Robinson.
Anne Robinson, thank you, yeah. And she was married to a mate of ours called Charlie, and he became editor of the Times. Charles, I've forgotten his name now, I'm sorry.
So have I. Long time ago, yes.
Yeah, a Scotsman, right? You know, a Scotsman from Glasgow. He came down to London and broke into the mail and all that and ended up as the editor of the Times. And he and Anne Robinson had the most dreadful split. He was back in Scotland, she was in England, having to drive 200 miles at a weekend to pick your children up for a day and then take them back. I mean, it's just horrendous, you know?
Divorce is the worst thing anybody can do to their children. It is absolutely horrific. I speak from experience.
Yes,
I've been there. I didn't want a divorce. I didn't want my family to disintegrate. It did. And it was very, very hard on them. It was hard on me, actually, but it was hard on my kids. And I think the damage and the destruction, you can never overcome that, really. It's always going to impact on your future life as a partner and as a parent.
Yeah.
Because we all learn from our parents and the way they do things.
Yeah. Well, as I say, so many of my mates got into divorces, you know, and you saw the way that families were wrecked. And by the way, they were going bankrupt because they were having to pay for a house for their wife and children to live in, and then they were having to rent a bedsit somewhere, you know, just horrendous domestic situations. And I think that is one of the reasons why I never got married. I thought, I'm never going to be able to do it. It wouldn't have been other women for me. It would have been my devotion to work and neglecting the familial, responsibility, excuse me, and all that kind of thing. I think that's why I didn't get married. But nevertheless, I think it's better not to have got married and caused all that, you know, harm and despair than to have got married and wrecked other people's lives. Like you've just said, you know, children's lives are wrecked by divorce.
Yes, they are. And the reason I never got married again is because I didn't want to go through that again.
Sure.
I couldn't bear to. Yeah. So my focus became my children and I gave them all my time and devotion when I wasn't working.
Yeah, great. Well done. You're a fine mother, Miss Jones.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think so too.
Many people would vouch for that. Talking about that and relationships, just for a minute, I read a piece by a woman you may or may not know. She's a male columnist, Katie Glass. And she was talking about, I think it was Mel C, and the possibility that Mel C might go back to a former boyfriend. And the piece she's written, oh no, it's J-Lo, I'm sorry, J-Lo, not Mel C, J-Lo. Reunions, Ben Affleck and J-Lo, right? And she says, oh no, J-Lo, you should never go back to an ex. Have you ever made that reverse journey, Miss Jones?
Almost happened once after about 20 odd years, and you know the person I'm talking about, and we're not going to name him.
Right.
Came back into my life after a long, long time.
Really?
And wanted to give it another go. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And no, absolutely not. You cannot. I do agree with Katie. You can't go back. You've got to keep going forwards.
Yeah.
All the reasons that you broke up from that person, all those reasons that were the reasons at the time, they still exist. Yes, of course they are.
Mm.
Because you can't basically change a personality.
Yes.
And if you had a clash, if there were things missing, if there were things you couldn't overcome back in those days, I mean, people do change. That is true. And people do mature. But it just wasn't worth the risk. I couldn't bear the idea of the heartache a second time.
And were you under quite a bit of pressure to accede to the request of this person?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm. I was the one for him, and he had spent the last 20 years finding out by going with about 40 other women by last count. Mm. And I thought, well, that's not very nice. He's been putting it around a bit.
Yeah.
Hasn't been saving it for me exactly.
Yeah.
But no, on balance, I just thought, no, all I'm going to get is an older, sort of more worn out, more needy version of the guy I was with in the first place. And I didn't need it, frankly.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Right, okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Pork. It's myself and Miss Jones. You've just heard of Miss Jones's romantic dilemmas in quite some detail. She's opening her heart to us. Just to get back on that subject just for a brief second, Leslie Ann, I have been looking for my first girlfriend all my life. Because I went out with my first girlfriend. It's a pretty well-documented story. Her name was Trudy. We went out for 5 years from the age of 16 to 21. And then I decided that I had to leave my hometown, Chester, to start my career in journalism properly. And I went to Newcastle and then Birmingham and London, Manchester and New York and everywhere else. And I'm afraid we split up. And I've had this urge to re-meet her in the last few years. I want to know what happened to her. I want to know what became of her life. I want to know that she had a great life and that she was successful and somebody looked after her. Do you think that's a sense of guilt from what I did all those years ago?
I think it's a bit of a midlife crisis, if I can be completely honest with
you. Yeah, definitely.
I think a lot of people do this. At our time of life, people do tend to look back because there's not so much to look forward to.
Mm.
And you look back over your life and you think about the mistakes you made, the people you let go, the ones who got away. And you think, it's a way of winding yourself back and becoming young again.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same reason that drives a lot of men and some women to seek partners much younger than themselves.
Yes.
Because it's almost vampiric in a way. Mm. You can steal a bit of youth from them and kid yourself that you're younger and, you know, you're not going to die so soon than you really are. I think it's a mistake, if I may say in a very gentle way, the girl that you fell in love with, that Trudy, whoever she was, she no longer exists because she has changed. She's an older woman now. And if she is still alive, this we don't even know, do we?
No, we don't. And in fact, do you know what the mystery is? I've been quite a popular figure for the last 15 years, you know, in radio and all that. I've done live shows around the country on stage. I've been on national radio, national TV, these podcasts that I do with you, I've done with other people. I can't believe that if Trudy's still around and alive, that in some way I would have known about it by now. Because social media is so wide ranging, I'm sure somebody would have said something by now, because I've told the story about her a number of times over the years in the hope that she would come to my attention. I even went back to Chester and wrote a piece for the local paper, the Chester Chronicle, so that she'd see my picture in the paper if she still lives there. But I don't think she does.
Maybe she married successfully, had a family.
So.
Maybe she emigrated to Australia. I mean, anything could have happened.
Yeah.
No, she might not want to be found. She may even have changed her name.
I think that's probably the case. I think that is probably the case, honestly. Because you always think back, don't you, to relationships. You've become pretty famous. You know, you're an award-winning author. You've been writing for national newspapers for the last 30 years. You've been all around the world with rock stars. I mean, did any of your previous boyfriends before the serious stuff ever get in touch with you?
One or two. Yeah, one or two did. I was contacted once by somebody who came out with all this stuff, all these names of people we used to hang around with, go to the cricket club in Bickley with, and all of this. Mm. I did not have a clue who he was.
Mm.
And he said, surely you remember this occasion and that party and this thing that we went to, that wedding. And I had no recollection whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I felt embarrassed about it. I mean, it might have been a scam for all I know, but he was so insistent that I had been in all these various places. Didn't produce any pictures, mind you. Yeah. But I suppose in those days, we didn't really take pictures very much.
No, we didn't.
Nobody had cameras, did
we? No, that's true. That's true.
But I have no recollection of this person whatsoever.
Yeah, no, well, you see, that's amazing. A couple of my friends, just very briefly, and then we get off this subject. A couple of my friends, in the last years of their life, when they both found they had terminal illnesses, went back to their first wives. They'd been married twice each since their first marriage. And when they found they were ill, they went back to their first wife and lived with them for the last months of their life.
Well, that's just because they want to be looked after.
Well, I don't know. Or
sorry to be harsh, but I mean, that happens quite a lot. And here's another reason why I'm not keen on remarrying, because if I meet somebody now, that person's going to be, you know, in the last third of their lives.
Yeah.
Men do tend to deteriorate faster than women.
Yes.
So that person only wants a woman to look after him as a mother would in the last stages of his life. Sorry, that's not what my life is for.
Yeah, well, I can't argue with that at all. By the way, in that short break we just had, I looked back on the Mayer stuff. I've just realised what an amazing background history this lady Mayer's got. Her father's a jailbird. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah. I just seen it. No, it just came up here. Other stars with jailbird fathers. So I didn't realise that. Famous line in this piece is, police asked two-year-old Mayer, do you know where your dad is? And she said, yes. Just as you were coming up the garden path, he went and hid under the bed. So,
oh, yeah, thanks.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I mean, look, there's loads of them. Naomi Campbell's biological father is a jailbird too.
Really? Golly.
Oh,
John Lennon's father was, wasn't he? Not to bring in John Lennon.
He was in the
sailor
Clink
or something.
At some stage. He was in the Navy, wasn't he? And,
yeah.
Or working for a merchant shipping company or something. And
yeah.
I think he jumped ship. He had fingers in many pies. He was trading stuff on board when he was going from port to port.
Yeah.
And I think, yes, he was detained at some point.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Now then, Miss Jones, I've got this piece here. Boris has got a new food waste czar, okay? Not sure what this person's name is, but the message is, don't waste one potato. The impact on our planet would be, you know, massively improved if people stopped throwing away food. Now, I think, you know, you and I have discussed this privately, but I am an absolute demon for not wasting food. And I get all that from my mother. My mother was brought up in the rubble of a bombed Birkenhead during the Second World War. Rationing went on until the year I was born, 1954. And my mum would not waste the last, you know, bit of a carrot or certainly not a potato or anything else. And I do exactly the same.
I'm terrible. I was in the Girl Guides and I don't waste anything.
Right.
I can't bear to throw food away. Absolutely can't bear. I was brought up on leftovers, you know, so we'd have a Sunday lunch.
Yes.
And whatever was left from the Sunday lunch would all be scooped up into bowls with sauces over the top in the fridge. And that's what we would have for Monday dinner.
Yeah, I do that now.
Nothing was wasted. Nothing at all.
I do that now. I had a joint yesterday, top joint. Is it top joint or what's it called? Topside joint, right?
Oh, so you have beef. Yes, you had
beef,
a joint.
Beef topside joint. And all the vegetables, sprouts, carrots, and cauliflower, I cook them all, although I know it's far too much. But then I parcel them up and use them for the rest of the week. And do you know what? I've got this strange sort of palate where I actually like the leftovers reheated more than I like the original.
I've always liked leftovers more. So say, for example, at Christmas time, I much prefer the cold turkey on the Boxing Day with
cold
all the
turkey,
cold turkey with all the stars. And, that's a preferable meal to me to the big sort of steaming roast on Christmas Day.
Yeah, funny enough, it's for me as well. Don't know how that.
Oh, and cold curry, you know, takeaway curry is always better the next day with the rice kind of refried and stuff and Chinese food as well.
I've never tried it, actually, with curry in Chinese. I don't do it with takeaway food. I always believe with takeaway
food. You just eat it.
I just eat it, and then I'm not sure when it was cooked and whether it's already been reheated and given to me. So I don't actually reheat it. The one thing I do like a lot is if I buy a pizza and I don't want every slice when I've bought it, I'm very happy to eat it cold for breakfast the next day.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you a funny story. Do you remember John Entwistle, the Ox, who was the bass player in The Who?
Yes.
I was very friendly with him and his girlfriend, Max, in the good old days.
Yeah.
They had a wonderful house down in Stow-on-the-Wold.
Right.
And I used to go down and spend long weekends with them, and it was all very riotous. Yeah. Great fun. And I once saw John come down, I say in the morning, it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon after a wild party the night before.
Yeah.
And he looked around and there was nothing to eat. So he opened the bin, the pedal bin, stood on the little thing and opened up the bin, took out the remains of the Chinese food from the night before from the bin and ate them. And we all sat there looking at each other as if to say, should we tell him? That food had gone to the bin via the dog's bowl.
Oh, my God. How revolting is that a story? That made me feel ill. I hope you didn't tell him.
No, we didn't. No, he's dead now anyway. He's not going to know, is he?
No, he's not going to know now. No, certainly not. I saw a great review of GB News yesterday in the Sunday Times. Camilla, somebody does it. And
Camilla Long, I think.
Camilla Long, that's right. And she was trying to sort of take the mickey out of it by saying it was all a bit disorganised, you know, and this didn't work that. But that's the beauty of starting anything up, isn't it? Radio station, television station, a podcast, anything. Of course, things go wrong to start off with. And I think it's all part of the colour and the appeal of something new. It's got to have the feeling of newishness about it. And it does when, you know, things like microphones don't work and presenters, you know, don't get the proper cues and all that kind of stuff. I'm loving GB News. I like its freshness and its approach.
I saw a great interview the other night. It was very funny, actually. I'm sure I texted you about it.
Yeah.
There was Dan Wooten interviewing Lady Colin Campbell, who'd brought her King Charles Spaniel to the studio.
Right.
So she was all dressed in white, but she had a tartan check sort of blanket over her legs.
Yes.
And this dog was sitting on her lap.
Yeah.
But the poor dog was very stressed being in a TV studio.
Yeah.
And it was just going round and round in circles on her lap and licking her face.
Oh,
and they were trying to have this very serious conversation about Meghan and Harry.
Yes.
And this whole scene was stolen by the dog. It was utterly hilarious.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. It's like new television, isn't it? You know, that wouldn't have happened on a high budget breakfast show, would it? Because, you know, on the BBC or something like that, because they have much more rigorous discipline in the studio, clearly, than GB News. But I like the look of GB News a lot. I think it's going to be great, you know, fun, really, to see how it all unfolds. Of course, it's masterminded by Andrew Neil. And Camilla Long did make the point that there's an irony of being called GB News, but actually they've ditched the traditional news bulletins, you know, because the format is so totally different. But anyway, good luck to them. Talking about,
I think the format is all news, I suppose, and that's why they're not having the bulletins. But
yeah.
I mean, the basic ethos of this channel, which Andrew Neil has banged on about ad infinitum, but he says they want to fight cancel culture and reflect views not heard in the media. And there's a lot to be said for that. So good luck to them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Talking about journalists and some that we've worked with in the past, and you have worked very closely in particular with the next gentleman I'm going to talk about, and that's Roy Greenslade, because the revelations about the sympathies he had for the IRA whilst he was a major Fleet Street figure become murkier and murkier, don't they?
Yeah, it's coming out now, isn't it, that he put his own journalists' lives at risk.
Yeah.
While he was sympathising with the IRA for the armed struggle. And it does raise questions about the private beliefs of journalists and their work, doesn't
it? Yes. Oh, no, it does indeed. The journalist concerned is a guy called Liam Clark, OK? Writing in the Sunday Times, July the 23rd, 2000, for a journalist living and working in Northern Ireland to be accused of collusion with the security forces is life-threatening. That comes after Roy Greenslade wrote in Anne Foblack. Anne Foblack means Our Struggle. It's a publication put out by the IRA, and in which he said, there are British newspapers tame and willing victims of self-censorship by the very nature of their capitalist ownership. For years, they have manufactured stories, plenty with the help of MI5 and the Royal Ulster Constabulary. That, according to Mr. Clark, a Sunday Times employee, was putting the lives of journalists in Northern Ireland at risk. That is unforgivable.
It is, yes, it is unforgivable. Yeah. We've damned Roy Greenslade quite a lot on this podcast, haven't we? Yeah. I don't think we need to go any further.
No, I totally agree. It's all been said. Now then, were you ever head girl at your school, Miss Jones? I can imagine you as a prim and proper young lady, you know, about 16, 17, sucking up to the headmistress and eventually being appointed head girl.
No, I was very naughty at school. I was the last person they would have appointed head girl. No, I was very. I was the one in the back row, always playing practical jokes, locking people in gas chambers, and
We had a gas chamber
in the science lab. You know, where you used to sort of put your hands in through these kind of rubber gloves and do experiments and stuff like that. I came into my own on April Fool's Day every year. Right. I would reorganize the entire timetable, send everybody to the wrong language class, cling film over the toilets, you know, underneath the seat. And we used to steal the clawed toads, the African clawed toads, out of biology and stick them in the headmistress's desk and all kinds of terrible stuff. I was the last person you would have appointed head girl.
Really? That's amazing. I nearly became head boy at the King's School, Chester, but didn't quite make it. I was made a prefect, and at my school, the prefects wore a black cloak, you know, like the teacher.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. Yeah, it was, honestly. It was Harry Potter-style black cloak. And I think that gave me the first instinctive feeling of what it was like to have power, you know what I mean? I wasn't a bully, and I didn't, you know, I didn't abuse my power, but it was nice to be able to know that I had a voice of authority and I could make things happen or make things change. And as I went through my journalistic career, without doubt, my happiest appointments and moments were when I was in charge of something, you know what I mean? And I was steering the ship and I had influence over how things worked. And I always found it very hard after that to accept, you know, other people's views, because I always thought, they're not as good as me, so why are they trying to tell me what to do?
Yeah, well, that's very dangerous, isn't it?
Well, it is dangerous. But when I got sacked as news editor of the Daily Express, I got offered either a sort of a meaningless promotion, you know, to assistant editor or something like that by Nick Lloyd, or did I want to go back to America for a year and do the campaign trail with Bill Clinton, who nobody had ever heard of then? And I chose the latter for a number of reasons. There was much more money in it. I wanted to get away from Fleet Street. I wasn't prepared to be sidelined from my own job and watch somebody else do it. So I did that and went back to America. But I simply couldn't relate to the people who were back in London trying to tell me things over the phone that I didn't agree with and didn't want to do. And I've been like that ever since. Very, very hard for me to have to follow somebody else's instructions.
Yeah, you were shaped from an early age. But I guess you're asking, because this is about St. Paul's Girls School, isn't it?
Yes, having, that's right. Yeah, sorry, I was going to mention that.
Abolished the title head girl.
Yes, that's right.
Which, I don't know, I've thought a lot about this, okay. Mm-hmm. This is a very slippery slope, because if you're abolishing head girl, head boy, these kind of titles, it's an acknowledgement of the fact that we no longer live in a binary society. Yes. So we're no longer girls or boys. There's an awful lot of grey in between. Mm. And we are finally facing up to the rights of people to identify as whoever they feel they should be.
Yes.
So within about 20 years, if this follow the rabbit down the hole, okay, we will cease to be a society in which we have girls and boys' schools.
Right.
There are celebrities now bringing up their children as non-gender specific.
Yeah, that's
so mad. They're neither girls nor boys. Mm. So this will become the norm.
Yeah.
And it's been coming for a while. Mm-hmm. Since the backlash against, you know, Barbies for girls and guns for boys and all of that.
Yeah.
But take it to its logical extreme and we will have a society in which there are no gender differences.
Yes.
There will be no binary society. Hmm. Probably not in our lifetime, but that is looking like the future. And that's a bit frightening.
Oh, it's terribly frightening. It's also genetic engineering as well. You know, ever since we were living in caves, there was a specific role for the male to go out and, you know, club a dinosaur or something for dinner and bring it back, and the female would then cook the dinner whilst the male sat at the entrance to the cave with a fire to protect the family from wild animals. And, you know, I'm not being macho and sexist in saying all that, but there are specific roles for very specific reasons that males and females can do. Women, for instance, over the years, have always been secretaries because they're dexterous, their fingers work better, and they've been, you know, like worked in sewing and that sort of stuff because their fingers are more nimble. Whereas men, of course, you know, are soldiers, mostly male soldiers, because they're bigger and stronger. And I do hope that we don't cloud the way society is to the extent where there's no difference between that.
Well, gender stereotypes, that is very dangerous territory. Everything you've just said, you will incite a riot by saying things like that these days, afraid.
That's the way the human being emerged. I mean, right the way from, you know, Darwin's theory of evolution. That's the way it emerged.
Yes, I don't disagree with you, Michael, but yes, we now have to be very wary of gender stereotypes.
Oh, I totally agree with you.
It's got nothing to do with genetic engineering, by the way. It's evolution has brought us to the point of technology ruling our existence. And a woman's fingers will work precisely the same way on a keyboard as a man's.
Yeah, but women are better at typing. I don't care what you say, they are, because their hands aren't as big and their fingers are longer and slender. It's just a fact of life. It's physiology.
It may well be, but I think we've got to be a bit wary of that. But I foresee the future here, and I think it's looking a bit bleak to me.
Okay, well, we don't want a bleak future. Talking about the future, I'm delighted to say that I've come across this story. You can't keep elephants, zoos will be ordered. Keeping elephants in zoos or safari parks is to be banned. Legislation will prohibit importation of any new animals, and the existing population will be allowed to die out naturally. That is one of the best good news stories I've read for a very, very long time. I've been campaigning against zoos for years now. I think they should all be shut down.
It's very interesting when you watch a documentary about elephants, isn't it? I mean, they are fantastically intelligent beings.
Indeed.
I hadn't realised until I saw a doc recently that, you know, it all makes sense. It's very obvious when you think about it. But they live as part of this sort of very closely bonded matriarchal herd. So they're born into a world of caressing trunks and protective big legs, and it's all about the women in their herd. So it's grandmothers and it's sisters, aunts and cousins, and it's a world that's maintained by the mothers, as is, when you think about it, as is our human world.
Yes.
So you can really closely correlate the two and understand why putting a few captive elephants into an enclosure in a zoo where there's just at most maybe four or five of them together, they really feel that emotional and physical pain of life in captivity. Of course, they don't breed very well in captivity, and they have a greatly reduced life expectancy as well. So I think this is one of the best moves for the world wildlife movement that we've had in a long, long time.
I totally agree with you. When I first went to Chester Zoo as a kid, nobody questioned zoos in those days. But I remember, even as a 10-year-old, I used to think, how can a gigantic animal like an elephant possibly live a happy life on a bit of sort of wasteland on the edge of the city of Chester? Honestly, I just thought, this is so wrong. It can't be right. And in those days, you'd go to the cinema, wouldn't you? And you'd see fantastic films like, you know, King Solomon's Mines and all that kind of stuff, and vast acreage of Africa where wild animals roamed. And you'd wonder why people were taking them to places like Chester and putting them into captivity. I hated it, and I've hated it ever since.
I think back in the day when zoos first became popular, was that in Victorian times?
Yes.
Or maybe a little earlier? The vast majority of people never left their native land.
It's true.
People weren't travelling to Africa. That was impossible for the majority.
Yeah.
So the idea of bringing back, you know, examples of different species and putting them in a place where people could go and observe them, see their behavior, all of that kind of thing, and marvel at these creatures they could never have imagined.
Yeah.
That was a very new idea, and we weren't yet sophisticated enough to know that that was cruel. But now that we know that, and now that we have such brilliant filming of documentaries and we can see all these things in their natural habitats and we can experience their lives thanks to people like David Attenborough and so on, we don't need to have them in zoos anymore.
No, I totally agree. And I, by the way, I never accept this theory of, oh, well, you know, it's to protect the species and all that. I mean, look, if the white rhinoceros dies out, it dies out. Hardly anybody's ever seen one. Hardly anybody in this country's ever seen a white rhinoceros. And I'm afraid that species do just die out. And And that's nature. That's, you know, survival of the fittest, as Darwin would have said.
It right. is tragic when species die out. Of course it is.
But, of course it is. But I'd rather species died out than they were kept captive in a little cage, you know, in England, honestly.
Yeah, we need to pay more attention to poaching and to the way
Definitely.
Wildlife parks are run, that kind of thing, and make it more worth the while of the local people to preserve those species.
I totally agree with you. Right. OK, Miss Jones, well, thank you very much indeed for having joined me today. Thank you to everybody else who will be listening to this. And Miss Jones and I will be back with you again very soon. So it's bye-bye from Planet Porky. We were chasing Mick Jagger once around France when he and Jerry Hall split up. And we went down one of the valleys, the Loire Valley or somewhere like that, you know, to find the Mick Jagger house, the chateau, on the edge of a river. It's a beautiful property. And amazingly, the gates were open. So we just opened the gates and we drove up there. And there was a French bloke sitting there in a chair outside with a cigarette, a Galois cigarette in his mouth. And only our photographer spoke English. So he went and had a chat with him, came back and said, no, Jagger isn't here.
French, you mean?
What did I say?
You said English.
Oh, yes, sorry. In fact, of course, yeah. The only one who could speak French. And the photographer back said, he's definitely not here. I said, when was he last here? He said, 3.5 years ago.
I once saw John come down, I say in the morning, it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon after a wild party the night before.
Yeah.
And he looked around and there was nothing to eat. So he opened the bin, the pedal bin, stood on the little thing and opened up the bin, took out the remains of the Chinese food from the night before from the bin and ate them. And we all sat there looking at each other as if to say, should we tell him? That food had gone to the bin via the dog's bowl.
Oh, my God. How revolting is that a story? That made me feel ill. I had a joint yesterday.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.